The episode you're about to listen to is a special edition of The Startup Show, recorded during Grit Daily's live event at South by Southwest. Here we have an expansive range of topics and featured experts from various industries. Enjoy.
We're here at South by Southwest at the lively and Grit Daily House, talking about the future of cybersecurity threats and defense tactics in this age of generative AI tech taking over. I am Mackenzie. I'm a tech reporter at CNBC, and I am joined by Zach Eikenberry, CEO of Hook Security, Dr. Jess Garza. She's worked with special forces in the DOD and pretty much every three-letter organization you can think of. Zach, Jess, welcome.
Thank you.
It's great to be here.
Zach, just to make sure I get this right, your expertise lies in startups and training people to recognize threats online. Tell me a little bit more about what Hook Security is working on.
Yeah, so Hook Security, we're pioneering a new type of security category we call psychological security, in which we help organizations and their non-technical employees recognize online manipulation. So that's our field of research, and it has a number of applications that we're also building over time.
Jess, anything you want to add in terms of the work that you're doing?
Yeah, so similar in the sense of psychological safety. And so when we're looking at the online tactics of manipulation, I'm looking at that from the linguistic side of the house. What are the words that are being imprinted on these websites? How are they the infrastructure of that? And then what are the end users looking for vulnerability and risk?
Okay, so kind of kicking this off, AI seems to be such a game changer for cyber criminals. You know, before you could try to break passwords with brute force, but now you can do so much more easily because of these vastly intelligent computer systems. So it feels like this turbocharged level of cyber threats. And it also seems like cyber criminals are some of your first adopters of these new generative AI tools. My question to you guys is just how bad is it out there? Like, help set the scene in terms of what cyber, like bad actors in the cyberspace are doing in terms of using this AI tech.
I'll let you take that one.
Okay. Well, it's as bad as your imagination can think of it being.
And worse.
Yeah, and worse. Yes. And worse. So there's some very interesting work out there on a vice to virtue cycle that we go through with technologies. This was most pronounced when, for years there, between 2010 and 2020, new communities were being introduced to electricity around the world. About 100,000 people were coming on the electric grid every day. Immediately following that, they would get free phones, right? So once you could charge the phone, the cell adoption or the cell network was there to provide internet access. What did these communities do with these phones? I'm not sure who the audience is, but the first thing they did was they gambled and looked at porn. And it just went through this awful vice cycle before it became virtuous, before they started using it for learning and job growth opportunities and educational access and financial management and all the other benefits. So whatever it is about human nature, it seems to go through that vice to virtue cycle as well. And we're seeing that in AI. So you're absolutely right. The innovations in AI right now are being driven by nefarious actors, by the people who have bad intentions with the technology first, and then we'll start to see it have more and more applications into the good guy arena.
Mm. And you know, when you think of bad practices, or you know, when you think of what AI is capable of, like deep fakes, are a big part of what people are worried about with respect to the election cycle. Like, we're in a banner year for elections. 2 billion people in 50 countries headed to the polls. Already, we're seeing like deep fakes be a part of the narrative in terms of trying to skew election results, robocalls with a fake Joe Biden. And I guess my question is, what are the bigger, like the big threats out there? Is it deepfakes? Is it, you know, the rise in fake email phishing attacks using AI? Like, what are what's out there? Helps out the scene.
I think all the above. I mean, you see a lot more spear phishing too. Even on bigger platforms with even like LinkedIn, you have people that are putting up their resumes and information and like certification numbers. And then you're getting these false people to email you and say, oh, like send me your email or not email, but send me your resume. And then they'll say like, this isn't an adequate platform. I need you to go to this website and put it up here for this amount of money. And now they have all your digital footprint of credit cards and all your background information, like personal, you know, PHI information or PII information. With that being said, too, though, is you're also looking on a bigger scale with like deep fakes of when we're uploading our pictures and our videos and our voice. Now you're getting real application of like our visual footprint photo and then our voice stimulator. So if I have kids and I have someone that's coming up and like, look, your mom sent me this. I want you to come with me after school. I mean, talk about the imagination earlier. It can get pretty dark pretty fast. So I think it expands to the breadth of your imagination.
And Zach, you and I were talking before this. It takes a remarkably little, like the input that it requires to create a deep fake is so minimal, which was shocking to me. Yep. Will you walk me through that stat?
Yeah. So as far as the data needed to train a deep fake, 90-95% of the way is one picture and six words.
Yep. One picture and six words.
Yeah. If I take, so we've already produced enough audio content already in this podcast for each of us to have a deep fake audio.
Correct.
And so that could be used for manipulation of all sorts, right? If you can set the scene, there's misinformation or propaganda manipulation. There are scams. Mm-hmm. And then there are, you know, business attacks and business economic threat. And then there's a whole nother section of other criminal activities that can be utilized or can utilize AI. And you might think that, one, I don't have that much information out there. Two, nobody wants the information I have out there. And number three, even if they did, what would they do with it? Mm-hmm. I think we're living in a world in which, like, the cat's out of the bag on all of that. You know, the cow's out of the barn. We're now having to figure out what does it mean for us as humans to deal with the technology we've created, and how do we recognize when we're being manipulated by it? And I think that's actually part of our, dare I say, technological evolution. And that's where we're on the precipice of right now.
What's the biggest threat right now? Is it just the fact that these phishing attacks are becoming a lot more sophisticated and a lot more convincing with AI? Is it deepfakes?
Text-based threats are still...
That's still pretty high.
Yeah. So emails, text messages, set images. And now deepfakes are on the rise. Now, the issue with deepfakes as it stands right now in 2024 is just the amount of CPUs and other things you have to invest in. So a cyber criminal has to actually put money out of pocket to get into several of these techs to be able to deploy them at any scale. Mm. And we're not seeing that yet, but we are seeing one-off, as Dr. Garza was saying, spear phishing, attacks on individuals through those means. So that hasn't been widely adopted. We don't need to scare people with it just yet.
Right.
But it's coming. Right now, today in 2024, it's still emails.
But the authenticity of some of those spear phishing, it looks legit. Like you're ready to give your card and information over because you think that this platform or website or whatever is, you know, for your interest or help.
Yeah. And I think when you talk about election concerns, election interference and the integrity of our elections, one of the more concerning pieces or one of the more concerning avenues that AI is being utilized by the cyber criminal is actually disrupting at the election volunteer level. So deep faking an election official at a state level and sending out false instructions down to the election managers at the county levels, at the city levels, etc. We've already seen some evidence that that's taking place.
And I think one question that a lot of people have is, what are campaign teams doing to defend against this or to brace themselves? And the answer I keep hearing is not much.
It's true.
Not much.
Yeah. So a lot of the work that you guys do focuses on training humans to recognize when they're being manipulated by these bad actors. Walk me through that.
So for me, I look at more of the linguistics, the words, that how they're being phrased, and then the frequency of those use of words too, or the lack of personalization. So they haven't gotten as sophisticated to really personalize some of those phishing attacks. So catching some of the ways in which things are phrases, and if that's again, LinkedIn is one that I've just seen here recently with a lot of different people on these resumes that they're trying to get jobs who have had several layoffs. It will just say like, hello, comma, and then it will give their position and the company that they were trying to, you know, work for, and then a link to go send it to. And the emails from, it looks, you know, have like, I'm going to make up a name, Susan at, you know, whatever company.com. And then the website will look just like what the email's chain was. But if you're not paying attention to those small details, or you're not trained to look at them, you're like, oh, cool, this is, they're helping me out. Look, I got the job. I'm about to get the job. And so for me, it's, if it's on a digital footprint, it's the images that are being used, the visibility, the high quality of images as well. If they've like adopted it from another website, and then the language that they're using.
And Zach, that reminds me of something else, like this rise in social media profiles in terms of, you know, bad actors creating these entire characters and biographies and just really building out their online footprint. Mm-hmm. Is that part of what you work with people on, just like recognizing some of those markers?
Yes. And I think there's the markers that you can recognize, the patterns that you see, and the pattern disrupts out there, to speak in an academic way. That's absolutely the case. But also training yourself to realize what state of mind you're in.
True.
To be manipulated. AI can easily generate entire social and online characters, right? An entire online personality that doesn't exist in real life. But why would that be powerful, right? It's only powerful to a certain number of people who want to engage with that character.
Mm-hmm.
And what we're also seeing post-COVID is not just the rise in the technology, but we also have an epidemic of loneliness.
Correct.
And this loneliness, compounded by shame, if you are caught up in something, has resulted in an explosion with catfishing,
mm-hmm.
with these characters, with scams and the application of these scams. So really what we're seeing is there is a lot of economic value in disrupting a business, right? To go in and figure out how to get the keys to the kingdom, put in ransomware, you know, hold them hostage, get their insurance to pay out. That's still the big dollar. That's the commercial real estate. But then there's residential real estate actors, to use this metaphor,
mm-hmm.
and they're coming after your grandparents. They're coming after your kids.
Mm-hmm.
And what they're doing there is preying on the fact that they might not have a social network that they can lean on, so their entire social world is online.
Correct. And so, was it just this perfect storm of, you know, LLMs and these sophisticated chatbots intersecting with us being at a point in history where it's peak loneliness, you know, post-COVID? I don't know. It does seem like these perfect storm of factors that have made people more vulnerable to these threats than ever before.
I think COVID had a huge part in that. I mean, everybody had to learn on-site systems. I mean, the coding got way more sophisticated. You know, platforms that we had to use to connect with people. Connection was a big thing. Trust was a big thing so as a psych and a counselor, having to have, you know, virtual sessions with people, you're hoping that their information is confidential, that nobody can hack, but you also had schools that were getting hacked really easily all throughout COVID. And then not being able to connect with family in person, that connection was the key to for a lot of those, you know, firewalls to go down.
And it seems like the stats are just, you know, and Zach, you can walk me through this as well. You know, people not interacting with a friend every day, something like 30% of Americans fall into that bucket. And then if you look at just cybercrime in 2023, there was more loss to cybercrime than you saw during COVID. 2024 is not pacing any better.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there's more loss right now or an economic damage to cybercrime than anything we could even talk about with climate or
it's wild.
Yeah, there's the climate change being the other one that tends to cycle back and forth as far as the World Economic Forums. But the I think when we're thinking about the epidemic of loneliness out there and the macro factors, I think we're just in a very interesting influx. So I'm not sure exactly how we got to this point. I'm not looking
at it. Or how we get out of it? Or how it gets better?
Well, so I'll confess, I am a techno-optimist in that I do see a light at the end of this tunnel.
Yeah, this idea of like good AI versus bad AI.
Yeah.
Like having AI actually help us
combat
these bad actors.
That the AI can actually help us with everything from the coding and the technology infrastructure and back end to itself being our own Jiminy Cricket to help us through recognizing whether or not something is manipulating us.
Correct.
And helping us recognize ourselves better. And so that awareness level, I think, is imperative. Now, I don't think it's going to be pretty for a while. There's a lot of data about the damage of self-awareness and self-image with things like Instagram.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm not throwing them under the bus, just that's what we're facing as a society. Mm-hmm. We don't know what it means to have this amount of access to information, this amount of access to people, and yet not be manipulated by folks with evil intent.
Yeah. I mean, kind of riffing on that idea of this techno-optimist point of view, there is one line of thought that when AI writes code, you won't have any of the security vulnerabilities that we see today because you won't have human error baked into the code base. Is that also something that you're thinking about? Yeah,
that's part of all of this. That's absolutely right. And then that we will, you know, you can ask Jeeves, your butler, to tell you the source of the communication.
What a throwback.
Right? You know, we don't know what to name these tools just yet, but that's exactly right.
But that's based on the biggest, like how they're prompting it too, though, right? So like how the quality of that prompt then dictates.
Yeah, that's at the LLM level. Right? Okay. Yes, absolutely. There is some deep tech out there.
That's something I wanted to ask you about because we've been talking about so many of like the, you know, individual level threats. But when you think about deep tech and this, you know, fact that most companies, if they're breached, the average length that somebody sits inside the house is 18 months. Like, talk to me more about that level of that type of security threat.
Yeah, so that's one of the more interesting statistics out there that the average business is actually already compromised. More than 50% of businesses are compromised at some level. And the threat actor, to use a term, is on average sitting in there 18 months before they do anything with it. A couple reasons for that. Most of the time, cyber criminals are actually just project managers, and they're just waiting to pass it off to the next person who can do something with their access.
When we're saying deep tech, we're talking about attacks on the code base of a company?
By and large, yes.
Okay.
We're deep tech also has the implication of physical security and physical security infrastructure. So like on the movies where you see somebody like they type furiously at a keyboard and then yell, "I'm in," like that moment of being able to take over the security cameras, lock down, change the, you know, the electrical panel, etc. That all has deep tech or application, as it were. So, that's part of what the deep tech, when we talk about these tools in development, will not only code on like websites and applications and mobile phone devices and things you interact with, like even down to your Tesla car, you're also talking about the ability to harden physical infrastructure. And so that is part of the cat and mouse game we're in right now. And we are limited in some ways by our CPU, our ability for GPUs and CPUs to actually calculate and roll out AI. So we have a throttling mechanism right now that's actually protecting us across the board.
Yeah, but this tech is moving so fast.
Wildly fast.
And so how do you... I mean, what we're talking about today, I feel like is going to be dated by, you know, dated in 3 hours from now. And I guess my question to you is, what are you seeing evolve quickly that people aren't talking about yet? Like, what is the threat that's going to be taking over in 6 months from now? And people just don't even know that it's an issue.
What do you think?
The scariest scenarios I've seen in some of these gaming have to do with disruption of the judicial system. Both on civil cases, but also on what evidence is provided, is charged, not charged, evidence manipulation. What I think is beyond scary of, you know, K-12 universities and students becoming targets, and even perhaps there is some scariness out there around things like vulnerable targets, like children's hospitals being disrupted. If I wanted to really scare you into thinking we were going to live in Gotham one day, it's going to come around the disruption to our judicial system.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Jess, what's keeping you up at night?
Me, I think it's more the impact what it's going to have on my kids and the lack of awareness that's even in the schools right now to teach the kids of what to be aware of. I think the everyday consumer has no idea what to look for, the language that's being used, really the impact that it will have day in and day out. And so I think that's really terrifying that, I mean, being in the field, you get to have awareness and see behind the scenes. But besides that, everyday civilians, they don't have access to that and they don't have the knowledge behind it. Or they're based on convenience and they just assume that everyone's going to protect them. And so the lack of ignorance, if you will, sets up them for failure.
Yeah. Well, what a positive note to end on.
There you go. I am an optimist. I do think you can call me John Henry, but I do think the humans will win. So.
I do too. I'm in the behavioral aspect of it as well, and I think that the best intentions will come out of everybody.
Yeah.
Awesome.
Jess, Zach, thank you both for joining me. Thank you to Lively and Grit Daily House for having us, and more soon.
Thank you.
Thank you.